Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 62. By the time this episode airs, we'll have wrapped up our virtual business retreat and opened registration for the next one, which will be on June 7th. So if you're interested in joining us, you can sign up at smarthabitsfortranslators.com/retreat. We're limiting the retreat to 25 people again, and all donations for the retreat will help support the podcast. Okay, so now on to the topic of today's episode. You know, it's been said many times that it's easier and less expensive to retain clients than it is to find new ones. But I know of so many freelancers who say that following up with clients is just really hard for them. They hate doing it. They don't want to bother anyone or come across as annoying or desperate for work. And I get that, but I also think that we're all running businesses here. And if you're running a sustainable business, you have to make it a point to keep up with your clients. And you can definitely follow up with them without being annoying or coming across as desperate. In fact, in our last episode with Melanie Paget-Powers, she talked about the power of sending an email to colleagues and clients, well, two separate emails actually, and in those emails she mentioned the type of work that she's open to doing and what her upcoming availability is. And I don't know about you, but nothing about that makes me think that she was either being annoying or being desperate. And guess what happened? She ended up with $30,000 worth of work from each email she sent. That email probably only took her a few minutes to write. So tell me that's not a huge return on your time investment. And thinking about the times when I followed up with clients, I'm talking here about like current clients, not people you've never worked with before. We'll get to following up with leads and potential clients a little bit later, but I think that it's interesting to think about the way that you follow up with clients. I've found it to often result in a lot of new work for me as well. Often, if I think about my clients and who I really enjoy working with, I like to keep in touch with them the most. That's not to say that I, you know, won't follow up with a client that I just haven't talked to in a long time, but I think that following up on a regular basis is something that we should all be doing, just to sort of touch base with our clients, see what's going on in their businesses or organizations, and see where we might fit into that equation if there's still a partnership there. I try to follow up with clients at least a few times a month, not always the same clients, of course. I spread it out a little bit, and I have found that when I do that, clients will often say, hey, yeah, well, we have a project coming up for you, or, oh, I'm so glad you emailed me. I do have this particular thing that you can help me with. And so I think that that's super, just a good, you know, habit to have in your business. It's something that's very easy to do, and it will also help you to keep the pulse of what's going on with your clients, because usually they'll share other information as well. What are your thoughts on this, Veronica? How do you view the concept of following up with your clients?
Yeah, I agree. It's something that's difficult for many people, and it's difficult for me at times too, but it's an extremely effective thing to do and to remember. In fact, it's on my list of things to do, especially for quiet periods or when I know I'm wrapping up a project and I really enjoyed it and I'm looking for more of that type of work. I know we'll be sharing some strategies and like specific things we do later on, so I'll keep the details and examples to that part. But I do that with my both direct and agency clients that I've enjoyed working with or worked with regularly or maybe worked with on a one-time project, but it was a really good one and I want to do more of that type of work. And I always see there's always a response. Something to keep in mind is that the response may not be immediate always. I've had examples where A client would reply, you know, weeks, in one case, even a few months after I sent that follow-up email, but there was a positive response. Just one thing to keep in mind is that every client is different, and some may be, you know, maybe very busy, or maybe that particular project or idea isn't top priority for them at the time. But in my experience, there is always a response, and it's always positive, either in terms of, yes, we'll keep that in mind, or in terms of, we actually do have a project coming up. So that's something that's really worth doing regularly. Let's talk about some ways you could follow up with current clients, some examples of what we're doing and what kind of outcome it usually has for us. I have heard that advice many times from many different people, and I've started doing that a while ago. And I really think that reading clients and reviewing that data over time can be really helpful. It's helpful to me in determining what clients I do want to follow up with. I know there are different, you know, ways of doing that, but just as clients are evaluating what freelancers or what contractors they've enjoyed working with, we too should be doing that type of evaluation or review for the clients we work, just for our own sake. And you can use different, you know, metrics to review them. It could be how easy or nice it was to work with them, or how happy you are with the rate that you've agreed on, or any other metrics you want to use. And then I like to review that data over time, say once a quarter, go back and look at what clients I've worked with and if they are the type of clients I want to work with more, or if it was a type of project that I really enjoyed and looking for more of that type of work, I'll follow up with them and remind them of the time we worked together and just say something like, I really enjoyed working with you on this project. I currently have availability and mention when you have availability. I've also seen good results in contacting clients and mentioning that I've completed training or got a certificate in a particular field that I know can be relevant to either the type of work I'm looking for or the type of work I've done for them in the past, like transcreation or linguistic quality assurance or any type of work that I enjoy doing. Another thing that can be a helpful a way of reaching out is to mention, maybe you have delivered a project to a client and you had a suggestion or an issue that you've raised, and you mentioned it when you delivered a project, but you never heard back. The client just said, okay, great, thanks. And, you know, they paid your invoice and you've moved on and they've moved on. But that could be a reason to get back to them and say, hey, you know, there was this suggestion or this question I've raised. Is there any feedback from the client, from the end client? And for me, it has worked well. They would either say, no, the client was happy and didn't have any, you know, questions or feedback, or they will, in fact, relay that feedback to you. Or if it was maybe a reviewer, you know, I also like to sometimes reach out and just say, did the reviewer or editor or the end client have any comments or feedback on my work? That's just important for me and my professional development. Or ask the feedback for feedback in general. I feel like we should be doing that more often. Before the pandemic, I haven't done that much since the pandemic started, but I used to send a postcard by mail to clients that I've enjoyed working with. It's a postcard that I've designed in Canva with my logo and just to say thank you. And I would just write a short handwritten note on the back. So these are the strategies I have used that I've, you know, seen success in either the client saying thanks and kind of me staying top of mind for them, or the client telling me they have a similar project or the project that I've mentioned to them in the pipeline that I can help them with. What about you? In what ways do you like to follow up with current clients?
Well, I love the postcard idea. Now that mail times have gotten a little bit faster, we should try to do that again. So I also like to follow up after a project as well. And I like to do this in a way that is, one, you can ask for feedback And I like that idea. I do think that's important because you're reminding the client that you worked with them and they enjoyed working with you, and you're giving them actually a recent example of that. But another thing I like to do is I like to let them know of my availability coming up. And I have freelance translators who work with me in my small agency who do this regularly too. And it's nice to know, one, what their availability is coming up, but also it reminds us that they're available for work, even if we haven't reached out to them in a while. And I think that this is really something that's a friendly thing to do. It also shows you as being proactive, and it lets the client know, hey, I'm still here. And I want to make sure that I'm available for you. Just so you know, though, I'm not available for these dates, but I will have availability as soon as I get back or something like that. Mm-hmm. And those tend to be really welcome emails from clients or for clients. And I like to do those, especially around the beginning of the year or holidays or something like that. So that's always a good way to think of sort of a follow-up to send somebody. And of course, like I said, it's not annoying. It's not, you know, you don't sound desperate for work, but, you know, you could even say, hey, I have some availability coming up next month, you know, for a certain amount of work. And I wanted to reach out to my best clients or my favorite clients, however you want to phrase that. And most clients will be really happy to know that they are one of your favorite or best clients. So it's sort of also a little bit of a way to, you know, compliment them. So I think that that's a smart way to do it. Something else that I have found that is helpful, and it's interesting because most clients are very willing to let you know what's coming up for them, is just to maybe once every, you know, quarter or 6 months, probably 6 months is even better. But if you haven't heard from them for a while, you could maybe switch to like once every 4 months or something, is just to check in with clients and see, hey, is there something coming up that you know you might need some additional help with? Since we last worked together, sort of like you said, I have gotten, you know, this certification or this, you know, training or, you know, attended these workshops that would be beneficial to my work that I do with you. Sort of like reiterating, like you said, the value that you provide. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't do enough. And it's not like it's tooting your own horn. It's essentially saying, hey, I'm continuing to provide value here. Even if you don't need, you know, something right away, I want you to know that I'm continuing to improve my skills. So you're continuously, you know, letting clients become aware of the fact that you are developing your skills and you're staying on top of things. So yeah, I think those are always really helpful. I tend to do most of mine via email. Sometimes I'll send I always send a holiday gift to my top clients. And so that's a good sort of way to check in with them in a way without necessarily following up, if you will. It's something that many clients are not expecting. Or if you do it in the new year, even better, then they're really not expecting it. And then you can touch base with them and say, hey, I hope that you enjoyed, you know, this thing that I sent you. And maybe you don't have to say, hey, did you get it? But something along the lines of, I hope you can enjoy that with your team or something. I look forward to working with you again this year or something along those lines. I think that's a very nice and soft way of doing that without you know, it sounding like you're pitching to them or something. Yeah. And so let's also sort of mention here briefly, if somebody were to refer a client to you, let's say somebody you've never worked with, you know, how do you follow up with them? I think we've talked about this in a previous episode, but I think it's really important when a client either approaches you or somebody refers a client to you, it's important to go ahead and follow up with that person and not wait for that potential client to email you first. I know too many people do this, and I feel like waiting for the client to email you is just not showing the client that you're very interested. And I don't think many people who do this actually think that way. I think they're waiting for the client to, you know, send details or something. But don't, you know, if you do that, many clients are actually waiting for you to get in touch with them to make sure, hey, did this person get the email in the first place with the referral? Are they available? Like, you know, clients have the same questions. So go ahead and be proactive. I think that's a good thing. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that happen too many times. And I think it's important to put, like, in many situations, in this case, to put yourself in clients' shoes. They have already mm-hmm. approached someone, and that person already told them they're either not available or not a good fit, mm-hmm. but they're, you know, kind enough to help them find another person. So the client's waiting, like, they have already communicated their needs. They're waiting for the next step. So yes, right. they might, you know, if there was an email of introduction, they might reply and contact you. But I think it's very professional to be proactive and reply back right away and let them know if you're available and, you know, what other information you need from them to proceed.
Yeah. And it also shows, right, exactly. It leaves a good impression, and it shows the client that, hey, I am interested and I am responsive. You know, it does send a message, right? So, yeah. Mm. Very interesting. Okay. Something else I think is important is to set yourself up to follow up with clients regularly. That way you don't have to think a lot about the process of following up, and it can start to become a smart habit in your business, which is something you do on the regular as a part of sustaining a successful freelance business. One thing that I like to do is I like to keep a file on each of my clients so I can recall conversations. Like, I'll take little notes in them. I call these swipe files. I take notes in them about something maybe they shared with me. It could relate to future projects. It may have something that they mentioned that is coming up for them or that's important to them. And I use that information in crafting emails to clients when I follow up with them, because then I can go back and mention something that they mentioned to me that was important to them at the time. Or, you know, even if it's something that doesn't seem important, like maybe your client loves to go skiing. Well, if you're following up with them in the middle of the winter, you might say, hey, I hope you're doing well and enjoying ski season or something like that. You know, it sounds mm-hmm. a little bit fluffy, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. But at the same time, people do like that human factor to these types of communications. And so just remembering that they like to ski is showing that, hey, I'm paying attention. And I think that's important. So what I like to have is both a file for each type of client and also some template emails to follow up with clients regularly. So when I reach out to them, I just tweak the template a little bit for the person or the company that I'm reaching out to, and then I can send it very quickly, and it just becomes a regular part of my work week. I don't have to think a lot about it. I don't have to spend hours of time figuring out what to say and when to send it and all of that. It's very easy, and it just feels like a regular part of doing business, right? So I try to schedule a little bit of time each week to do this. Usually I'll think of something on, you know, out of the blue, I'll think, oh, I need to follow up with that person. And instead of stopping everything I'm doing, I'll make a note of it. And then when I get to that point in my week, when it's time to follow up with clients, I will do them all at once. And so just that's the way my brain tends to work. I think all of a sudden, like, oh, I got to remember to get in touch with that person or something. And so that's the way that I like to start the week. I like to do it at the beginning of the week instead of at the end, so that people have some time during the week to have seen my message and reply. Because if you send somebody a message like this on a Friday or something, it can easily get lost, or they might be out of the office. So those are just a few things that I like to do. What about you? Do you prep ahead of time so it's easier to follow up with people regularly?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I don't have you know, a very comprehensive system, but the things that work for me is, in addition to my bookkeeping system and my project management system in Asana, I also have a good old-fashioned Excel spreadsheet where I keep track of the projects I've worked on, and I'll put in a few keywords. You know, there's definitely the name of the client, the contact person, and what type of project it was, what it was about. And then I have my ranking system there as far as, you know, how much I enjoyed working with that client, how important that type of project is to, you know, my ideal workflow or work distribution. And then my reminder to send a few follow-up messages is whenever I do my whenever I organize my, you know, bookkeeping and my invoicing and all that. So it's part of my admin. I kind of tacked it on to my admin process. So whenever I work with that Excel spreadsheet, it's my nudge to find a couple of clients that I have worked with in the past that are in that spreadsheet. And I send a couple of emails that way. That, yeah. You know, that way I don't need like a separate reminder to do that. It's like just part of the process for me. Whenever I open that spreadsheet, two things come to mind is, you know, keeping track of my work and what type of clients are there that I have worked with and enjoyed working with but haven't heard from in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Corinne McKay calls nudging dormant clients, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly. And like you, I have a couple of templates ready to go in my G Suite, in my Gmail, that I can easily tweak. That way the hardest part is done, like the hardest part coming up with an email.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about that. The template mm-hmm. is there. It takes me just a couple of minutes to tweak it. I have the information ready to go in my Excel spreadsheet. You know, if I want to mention the particular project we worked on that I really enjoyed. And then I also have, you know, more information in my Asana workspace. So I have a link to that project in the spreadsheet. So everything mm-hmm. is easily accessible for me. So, yeah, I think that kind of sums it up for me. It definitely makes it easier to follow up. I feel less, you know, I don't feel as stressed as I used in the past to be like, oh, I have to do this. And, you know, mm-hmm. you kind of, people tend to delay or like postpone these things because they seem so difficult.
Yeah.
But if you already have some prep work done, it makes it much easier. Yeah, so let's talk about why is that we feel it can be hard to follow up with people. What's stopping us from doing so? And why do we often make it into a bigger deal, emotionally at least, than it really is? I think there are many reasons for it, but the most obvious ones that come to mind are feeling lack of confidence, feeling like an imposter, that you're kind of annoying people by sending them this nudge or following up. And I think that the advice we shared in one of our very first, I think maybe it was our very first episode on the imposter syndrome, we should link to that.
Yeah.
Feel that much of that advice would be helpful in overcoming that feeling that mm-hmm. you're imposing on someone's time. And just remembering that you are not some, you know, it's not like you're an annoying salesman knocking on people's doors, having no clue whether they need your products or services mm-hmm. or not. You have already worked with that client. You have some experience working with them. They know who you are. You know what their needs are, what they were in the past. So there's already, you know, that part is already taken care of. That means you're not an annoying salesman, so you shouldn't think that way. You bring value to the table, and it's important to remind yourself what value you do bring and that you have a clue of what you're talking about. And I think that another piece that many freelancers lack is just understanding of the project management cycle and how clients work, you know, with projects. Because if we understood better how projects are organized on a client's end, mm-hmm. we would feel less kind of out of touch
yeah.
with them when we're thinking of following up. Mm-hmm. Most clients, whether they're direct clients or agency clients, have follow a specific process, and reviewing the project after it was completed is an essential part of that. So it's important to bring your part to the table, and if you have anything to share about you know, what you enjoyed particularly when working on this project with them, or what your, you know, takeaways or feedback was, most clients appreciate that. And it's important not to, you know, do that like a year after the project was completed, mm-hmm. but pretty promptly. And just staying in touch, it's like stakeholder management 101, you know. It's important to be in touch with your stakeholders, with the people who have an impact on your work and mm-hmm. who are important to you, in order to stay top of mind for them. So that would be my take on that. What would you add to this, Madalena?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I also think that part of the reason that people avoid it, or they think it's, you know, uncomfortable, is because they're putting themselves in a client's shoes without fully understanding, like you said, the client's perspective. You know, some of us think, oh, I don't want to be followed up with on certain things. And, you know, usually the things we don't want to be followed up with on are things we don't need, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you said something very important. And I remember reading this in a blog post, which we can link to, by Corinne McKay. And she shared the same sentiment, like, I follow up with the clients who I know need my help. And that's really important, right? So when you do that, when you know that they need your services, meaning that they do hire, let's say, translators who work in your language pair or in your specialization and so on, then it's not going to come across to them as just another email where somebody's just, you know, oh, this thing I don't need, or this person's, you know, services I'm never going to use, or something like that. It's not like that. Then you know that you are offering them the opportunity to follow up with you as well. It goes both ways. And I think that you said something along the same lines as Corinne, which was, you know, you're following up with people who you already brought value to, or that you can bring value to if you haven't worked with them yet. And one thing that occurs to me is, you have to, like you said, you have to know a little bit about the client too. So if you can put yourself in their shoes, I mean, it's important to not just send, you know, a ton of emails out and then just assume everybody's going to get back to you. If you do some real research and see what types of clients, like who, whether it's agency or direct clients, who's hiring, or who would need your services in your language pair, in your specialization, you're much more likely to get a response from those people. Whereas, for example, I'll give you an example. My small agency works in several language pairs very regularly and others very rarely. And sometimes we'll get people following up with us for a language that we just never work with. And we do take the time to respond, but many people don't. And it's not that, you know, they're never going to need your services. And I'm not saying, you know, you're wasting your time. But at the same time, if you do that with a bunch of clients who you're not really sure if they need your services, then your return and response rate is going to be very low. Whereas if you take the time to see, like, who is actually needing these languages or these specializations, well, usually a combination of both, right? Then it's much more likely that you're going to see a positive response, even if they don't need your services right away. And in that case, I think it makes the emotional part of it easier because you know that they already use services like the ones that you offer. And I think that that's an important way to think about this, is that you're not, and it makes it feel like, you know, I'm not being annoying because I already know for a fact that they need this. So that's a good way to think of it. It's sort of like the idea of not throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks, but being more focused and more targeted. And also that saves you time as well, right? You're not sending out emails to 100 prospects where you have no clue if they would ever hire somebody like you. You would send them out to 100 prospects where you actually do know that they would need your language services at some point, right? You have some reason to think that. Same thing with your regular clients. If they've hired you before, chances are they may need your services again. And if they had a good experience, they're probably more likely to say yes, because it's a lot easier to work with somebody again than to try to find somebody new. You know, so that's why I say put yourself in your client's shoes. Okay, so, well, we could probably keep talking about this a lot longer, but we also want to hear from you. If you have any thoughts on why it's hard to follow up with clients, or if you have some success stories or strategies that have worked for you, please let us know. You can leave a comment on the show notes page for this episode, which you'll find on our website, or you can tag us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, or you can email us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. So before we wrap up, let's share a favorite with our listeners for a segment that we like to do that's called What's on Your Desk. What do you think, Veronica? We haven't done this in a while.
Yeah, that's true. We've been talking about books mostly lately, so that's a good one to do. The tool I wanted to mention today, we've heard about it many times, and I know you're using it, but I haven't used it regularly. For the past month, I have, and I'm really enjoying it. It's Toggle, the time tracker. I've tried it in the past a couple of times and failed for some reason. This time, I've been going strong for a month, and it's really become a part of my daily routine to use it. And I am really enjoying the data that I'm getting out of it. It helps me see how much time I spend on various projects and tasks that I do throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And especially because I have so many things going on and, you know, my own work, the teaching, the courses that I'm teaching at Houston Community College, the volunteering projects and my own personal projects. I really wanted to get a better idea of the time I spend on each of these, and it's been really helpful. And I also like the it has an integrated Pomodoro timer. Mm-hmm. So if you're if you like using that tool, you can use it in the same sort of tool, two in one.
Awesome.
So that's the tool I've been using and enjoying, and I recommend others to try too if they haven't already. What about you?
Yes. So this is one of my favorites that I know I've probably mentioned at some point on the podcast before, but I don't think I've brought it up for this segment. It's not what's on my desk, but it is my desk. Have I talked to you about the sit-stand desk that I have?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. This desk is something that I think I've pretty much brought up mostly on like Twitter because people have asked about it or they've seen it in a picture or mm-hmm. something that I shared. But I have a sit-stand desk that I have been using for over a year now, and I love this thing so much. So basically, it's digital. The way that you raise it and lower it is digital. And you can set with a memory the different levels that you want it to be at. I think it has three memories. I just used two of them, one for sitting and one for standing. And I really like the fact that at, you know, any point during the day, if I want to sit or stand, I can very quickly do that without like rearranging everything and, you know, or using one of those levers that some of them have or those cranks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this one has a whiteboard top. So it's like glass or tempered glass, and you can use a whiteboard marker on it. So if you have like an idea and you want to draw something out, or you want to not forget something, or you want to make a list that you can then erase later, you can use the top of the desk for that. And it also has USB ports, so I can charge my AirPods and my phone on the go, or, you know, something like that. And it has just been so good. I actually find that I stand most of the day now versus sitting, and it's been so mm-hmm. nice. And you know, other people probably know this too, but I have one of those under desk treadmills. So if I'm like reading something, I can walk for half an hour or something. So this desk makes it super easy to do that with that under desk treadmill. But yeah, we'll share what that looks like in the show notes.
That's awesome. Well, I have a sit-stand desk too, but yours sounds much better.
Cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Our email subscribers will get a summary of today's episode, including the links to all the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving your emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you liked this episode, we'd love it if you would share it with a colleague or friend and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. This only takes a minute, and we've recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. You can find that in our show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you liked this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.